Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. I want to tell you guys a little bit about the Department of MetaHuman Affairs. This one is a story about a team led by a retired sidekick, two felons, a failed actor from Broadway, and a reprogrammed cyborg. But their first mission is to stop the criminals who have robbed a bank, and they will have to set the world at ease. You're going to get 180 pages of entertainment, action-packed awesomeness right here in the first six issues in a collected hardcover volume one. All you got to do is head on over to Kickstarter.com and type in the Department of MetaHuman Affairs or DMA and check it out right now.
Listening to the House of Indie.
All right, welcome to another episode of the House of Indie. My name is Joey Galvez, and I'm here with a wonderful creator on the show. I'm here with Peter Rick, creator of Once Our Land and A King's Vengeance. How's it going, man?
I'm good. Sorry for the audio. There's construction next door, and there's nothing I can do about it. I actually went to the coffee shop to hear because it would be a better sound, and who knows. So it was the right choice.
It's all good. It's all good. We'll just play along with it, man. You're under construction, and it's awesome because this stuff here that I'm looking at King's Vengeance right now, and comparing it to Once Our Land, I gotta say, man, it looks a lot cleaner and a lot more put together here a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about Once Our Land and A King's Vengeance here, and how. Am I seeing it? I'm not seeing illusions, right? Is there a little bit of a difference between the art styles there?
Yeah. So, Once Our Land, the first part, the black and white part, this one, I did that when I was 19 or 18. And then the second part of Once Our Land, I did it when I was, 32. So there was a huge gap and also, I did it with a friend of mine. I forget his name right now. Sunny Shah, and he came up to me. He's like, "Hey, I'd love to work with you." And I think he didn't foresee how much work a comic is. And I think a lot of people don't understand how much work a comic book is. So after that, with Once Our Land 2, I partnered up with Jake Balbo. From Philippines too. So I would do the drawings, the layouts, the designs, and then I hired him to clean up the lines. So like just even from Once Our Land Part 1 to Part 2, there's a change. From Once Our Land 1 to Once Our Land 2, there's a change. And then seeing how long and expensive it is to make a book, I didn't want to do something else that would take, you know, between 3 to 7 days a page. So I started looking at other ways to do it and looking at Andrew McLean's work, McLean, and then looking at a Hellboy, Mignola. Those were ways that I could draw and it would be so much faster. So instead of taking me 7 days, it would take me like a day and a half with color and bubbles. Wow. So it was just like another way to do it and something fast and a style that I really do like. Mm-hmm. And I even told some friends what I was doing, and they liked Once Our Land, how it looked, and they said I was doing a mistake until they saw the pages, and then they said, "Oh wow, you were right, and I was wrong." So
there you go. And that's super super interesting to hear that, because I do, and I love that you kind of threw out there, Andrew McLean and Headlopper, because that's one of the first things that I thought of when I was reading this stuff and I was looking at your art style, and I said, "Oh wow, this really does give me this kind of feel of that kind of stuff." And then the Mignola stuff, I was like, "I'm like, who doesn't love that art style?" So I was very intrigued when I saw this, and I said, "Wow. This is gorgeous." Let's talk a little bit about A King's Vengeance. Can you give us the quick log line of this book? Number one is already out, and number two is now in pre-order, I believe, right now as of this recording. So please give us a quick log line of this story.
So the log line is it's the story of King Ulrich. It's in a world that is a mix of steampunk, fantasy, sorcery. Instead of riding horses, they ride raptors, like big, huge raptors. And it's a vexed warrior who seeks revenge on the people who've murdered his family. And he's brought back to life 23 years later. And so the world has changed. So the people who killed the family took over the world, and he's brought back to life to get revenge on everything that's happened in the world that's changed. So his kingdom has been taken over by who murdered him and his family. Yeah, so it's a very violent. If you like RoboCop, if you like Hellboy, if you like He-Man. I know the He-Man world doesn't make any sense, but as a kid, I loved it so much. And I always thought, what if it was super violent, like Conan the Barbarian? So it's a mix of all that. And it's a story it's an idea I had when I was 8 years old. And I wanted to, because I really love fantasy like that. And I wanted to see a world where this, anti-hero, vampire dude roams the earth and rides a raptor, and it took me that long to put it together, but here you go.
that's pretty awesome. This is pretty brutal, man, for an eight-year-old to be coming up with it. But
my dad let me watch RoboCop, and it's weird because even like RoboCop, there was a kid's cartoon, Saturday morning cartoon. Uh-huh. And I think everyone had seen RoboCop, even though it's violent. And, we weren't damaged from it. I think the world has changed. And
it's a different
kids
time.
Do love violence. You just can't, I guess, say it in the mainstream.
I know. It's a completely different time, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of a unique story here. And the way you set it up, you kind of just toss us right into the middle of something. It's right after a big, huge battle. You do give us kind of this little backstory here. But there are some people out there who would probably be kind of stray away from something like that. So how did you tackle something that obviously is I feel like it's a great story, but to throw us right in the middle of something where we're right in the mix. We have to kind of think of, okay, there's something that happened before this, but we're here in this position of the story now. Why? So why did that? Why did you put us right in this position of the story?
Well, I mean, Lord of the Rings, the beginning of the movie, they explain a huge thing, how the rings came together and what's happened. And that's also at the end of a war. I just think having to show people that there is a huge world, and I've thought about it. And I mean, every story you get is, I think it's because it's a new fantasy world. So I think showing people that I've done the work before, and the characters are developed, and just like Star Wars as well, Episode 4, you want to see what happened before, but this is a story for now. And I think this is the best way to tell the story of the revenge. Like, if you want to know the prequel, if it's a success, then maybe I'll make it, but it's all written down. And to me, that was just the best way to start. And I like the idea of what happens at the end of a war, like just like what happens World War II if you start at the end, but some guy gets brought back to life and has to kill Hitler again. It's just like, I think any story, like, it's, there's always a before and after, and I just wanted to start mine at the end of a 4-year world war.
Wow. And so it was on purpose. And you said that this is it's written. So the quote unquote prequel part of this, or the war portion of this story, you have that written down?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have it written down. I think I wrote it like 8 years ago. This is really old. It took me so long to, cause I was focused on Wonderland, and when Wonderland 2 was getting made, I was going to get another artist to draw it with me, like I did with Wonderland 2. But the funds weren't there. I thought I had more money than I did. King's Vengeance was first conceptualized to be a feature film. And, that wasn't working out because it was, you know, at least an $80 million movie. And I just thought that making a comic book might entice somebody to actually make it in a movie, because I'm a filmmaker and I always try to see things as a film. But yeah, it is done. The story after he actually has vengeance, or does he? The story after that is also written down. That one's a bit more fleshed out. Yeah, so there's a lot in this world, and
that's fantastic, though. So it's all written down. So that means that, you know, it was all set up to be this way in the first place. You know, I recently, you know, have come across a handful of other people talking about stuff about this specific book, and I don't want to say anything, and I don't want to bad talk anybody, but they were definitely talking about how this book is, you just throw us right in the middle of it, and I want to know all this stuff. So I'm glad that you clarified a little bit of that, telling us, you know, it's written down, it's fleshed out, I've got that story, but this is where I wanted this to start, and I love that idea.
Mm-hmm. It's also like those movies like Star Wars and Indiana Jones. You start in like a shortened version of like the end of another story, yeah, and then the credits roll, and then it's our story, mm-hmm, like the one that you're going to see. So this is just kind of a prelogue to what's to show how powerful and skilled the king is, and how ruthless he is.
Yeah.
How he can also command an army, but he can also do it like a lone wolf. And it's just this, to show like, you know, his character before you see the character that he is later. Because I could have started right when he's as he's resurrected, but I like the idea of doing that. I can see how some people might be confused, but I mean, what's confusing too is that people all, like, when they watch a zombie movie or a movie that doesn't explain where the zombies, mm-hmm, come from. If it was real life zombies, there is no explanation. Like, we don't even know where COVID came from, and we're deep in it. Like, not every pandemic needs to have an answer, because in real life there isn't really,
right,
an answer.
And that's why I love comic books, right? Because comic books can be anything, right? It can be just a snapshot of a moment in a grander scheme of things, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the way I view it. I view, you know, I love those stories where, you know, There's, you know, there, like, yeah, I love that. Yeah, how you said, you know, we got this pandemic going on right now, right? But yeah, you have, you know, the way you in your life dealt with it when it came around, and I've got my story. But you, mm-hmm, know, obviously, if I were to tell my story of the way the pandemic hit me and my family, it would completely be different from your version of that story. And it's because it's a snapshot.
And also, you might have a story during the pandemic. Like, if you tell your kids or your grandchildren, it's like, oh, yeah, and there was a pandemic when this happened. They're like, what? A pandemic? It's like, yeah, but that's a different story.
You don't need right, to, right?
You don't have to explain everything.
Exactly. Yeah. There's stories within. It's like Inception. It's a stories yeah, within stories. All right, man, let's take a quick little break here, and once we get back from this break, I want to talk to you a little bit about the, you know, the process, the creative process, and you know, the things that you do, because I know there's some things that creators always do, and it's always different. So I want to know, when we come back, let's talk to you a little bit more about that. All right, and we are back. We're still here with Peter Rick, creator of Once Our Land and A King's Vengeance. And before we took the break, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your process different from, you know, a Once Our Land to this, or how did it differ at all?
Yeah, it was pretty different, because this one, I did a TV show with Davila LeBlanc, a friend / writer of mine. And he was reading a lot of Conan at the time, like the new reissue, not reissues, but the new series that came out like 10 years ago. And so I pitched them this idea. I was like, would you want to, I have this vague idea of what I wanted, but this is the elements that I want. So I want a anti-hero. I want him to be somewhat of a undead / vampire, mm-hmm, or zombie. I want him to ride a raptor. I want there to be, you know, I think of Lord of the Rings and things like that, and Conan, obviously. And so I give him that, like these little hints, and he wrote a story, and then out of that we worked on it together. And we had the script, and it was, I think, about 20 pages. And then it just kind of died and didn't really go anywhere. And then I just wrote the end of the story based on our notes and based on, because I had already done Once Our Land by then. And so I felt more comfortable writing. Because before, people always said my writing, it was very static, and I write like a 14-year-old. But since then, you know, I've actually written scripts and TV shows, and you know, I just did a kid's book. So I just felt like I could actually do this. I was also reading a lot of scripts from professional writers, and I thought I could do better. And that's also why I started writing more. So I finished writing the script of the whole first story about 5-6 years ago. And then I was going to do it at the same time as Once Our Land 2. And I worked with an artist, and I loved his work, but it wasn't translating to A King's Vengeance so well. Because I had done designs for it, but as a movie, so they're very painterly.
Okay.
And it wasn't very comic book. It was more to show what it would like with actors. And then after doing that, I also sent it to another friend. And then I thought maybe I could just tackle it on my own if I find a style that I could do a lot faster. So it was about, like, research and development was maybe, I don't know, 4 years.
Wow. You know,
I wasn't doing that full time, but every once in a while I'll like nitpick at it.
Yeah.
And once I figured out that style that I actually really liked, then I did more designs of the vehicles, the worlds, the other characters. And then I was like, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to start doing the pages. And it was about 8 months of work, you know, between other works. And put it all together. And I'm really happy. Like, for some people who have actually read the whole book, because you can get the hardcover from me. And then Scout is going to do a trade, I'm sure, at the end. And you can see there's a making of, and you can see all the steps I've gone through. So some people said that it was like some of the best fight scenes they've seen in a comic book, and I'm really happy to.
I'm looking at it now. There's one page here, and you happen to send me the full version of this so I can take a look at that, what you're talking about now. And there's one, and it's so gorgeous, dude. That scene, I'm just like, wow, you're absolutely correct, because I was going to bring that up. So that's such a cool thing. So I really want people to be on this book, because it just gets even better and better. I'm
still. Yeah, because volume two, that's going to, the second edition has way more fighting than the first one. The first one has a bit, and it's really gory, but the second one, there's way more fighting. And, as a comic book reader, I like it when it's very clear what's going on, and you can just read it quick and not have to like study the page. Okay, how did he go from there to there?
Yeah.
So
it's perfect. Yeah. And there's not too much dialogue in the next few here, it looks like. And it's right. And it works. It works. And I love that, because like what you're saying here, it just works. You said that you had a story when you were 8. So man, do you keep your notebooks and things of that nature? Did you write it down and just kept it go? Because man, I've had stuff when I was a kid, and it's gotten lost, man. So I don't know how you've kept something like that in your head since you were 8 years old.
I think it's just something that I really wanted to see. I don't write many things down. I don't keep an agenda, even though I'm like really busy and I do all these projects. Like my girlfriend, she has to have an agenda, and she has to write down everything. And you know, most people do but I never like with the band, the movies, the work, the contract work, the comic books, the music videos, the pitches I'm doing, like I never write anything down. It's just like,
you're a busy guy.
And I think if it's good, it's worth remembering.
Right. And that's the best thing I can say, because I have a couple stories in my head, too. And you're right. You never forget those things. You just continue to add to them in your head. And eventually when it gets down on the page, it'll hopefully be as glorious as it is in your head.
Yeah. Once you put it down, it looks always so different.
Right. So talk a little bit about that. So was this, it was any of your work at all? Did you ever see something different in your head, or was it better than it came out?
When I did do the first drawings, it was, Sin City had just come out, and the first one, and seeing how they did that for a low budget and the black and white with red, and the BGs all CGI, I thought, okay, maybe I can do it like this. So I had designed it to be filmed like Sin City. And then when that didn't work, and I got the comic book artist, I was looking at a lot of Robert Valley's work and, other people. And then that didn't work. And then I just looked at Mike Mignola, and that's when also I started putting more steampunk, and like people who can wear jackets instead of just, because the main character has a scarf and a jacket and the knight armor on top and underneath. So that came from looking at Mike Mignola's work, and it's a big mishmash of like all the stuff I liked, and I was trying to create something new and something that felt like could be real and work and not necessarily feel old but contemporary. And
well, I think you nailed every single one of those things on the head, man, because this is gorgeous. You have the same kind of colors throughout the entire story here in King's Vengeance, and just, you know, pops of color here and there, but
oh yeah, and the color of that gorgeous. I was, when it was what's that comic book, Paper Girls, like I love those covers. Yeah. Uh-huh. And they really pop, and mm-hmm. I was thinking like, let's add some really weird colors. Like all the blood is bright pink. And
yeah.
There's a lot of pink and purples in this.
I love it.
It's super grayscale-y still, like almost a black and white film with tint. Just like, yeah. You know, I still have the Sin City thing.
Yeah.
Going.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
And yeah. You got these big swords and big, I love it. It's gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah, another thing, note I had with the Vila was, he has a sword that's also a shotgun.
Oh, dude, yeah.
That was part of it, too.
That's like 90s all day, right? Yeah. That's awesome. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you hanging out with me and talking to me about all your work here. Can you please let everybody know? You know, we didn't get to talk about all the other stuff that you do, man, but please, this is the time where you can plug all that good stuff that you are involved in, man.
So Once Our Land, we're trying to make it as a feature with Mercury Films, who did, you know, the Hilda comic book for kids.
Yeah.
They won the Emmy, so I partnered up with them, and we did a proof of concept. It's done, so I think it'll be released soon.
Awesome. I love it.
So that's really cool. Can't wait to share with the Scout guys as well.
Yeah.
I did do a ghost book, Ghosts Are People Too.
I've seen that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's for kids who are afraid of ghosts, to show that they're also people and don't be afraid of things you don't understand. Like, take the chance to learn where they come from and who they are.
I love it.
So it has different connotations to it that you can share with you throughout your life and share with others. I have a band called Humans. You can see all my stuff at peterrickricq.com. I post most of it there. So you can see the music videos, the features I've done. I did a feature called Dead Check, a zombie movie. Yeah, I don't know. I do a lot, so it's a lot to keep track. I do murals, I do paintings, I do scores.
All kinds of awesome stuff, man. So you're killing it, dude. So I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule to sit down with me and talk about this cool stuff, dude.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to have me there.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Do you want to drop your socials just or anything like that? Or just...
Oh, yeah. On Instagram, I'm Prick, P-R-I-C-Q. So my last name's R-I-C-Q. So Peter Rick, Prick. But I am not a prick. I kind of regret using that name so much. And you could see also, I did some NFTs called Wastelanders. It's like post-apocalyptic.
I saw those are cool.
Future.
I saw those everywhere, dude, and I didn't know it was you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's right.
That was pretty cool. I didn't know it was you.
So we did that, and I'm doing a comic book for Wastelanders, and then I also have a animated trailer you can see. So Wastelanders with a Z.com. You can find out more about it there. We have a solid roadmap. It's something nice. That's fun. Doing a lot of NFT stuff. What else?
It's a crazy world, man. I'm still trying to learn about NFTs and like the thing, my buddy, the CEO of the podcast network, he's in that world right now. And the things that he was telling me that we could do with, I was like, well, oh my gosh, dude, this is going to open up. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
It's huge. Like, you know, some people say it's dying down, but all the new projects are coming up out that are solid. They're really doing things that are groundbreaking. And I really think it's actually not going to go anywhere.
It's not going anywhere.
And bigger.
It's not good. No.
Like Azuki. Have you heard of Azuki?
I have not heard of that one. No.
I just bought one and like a couple of weeks ago, and it's doing well. And I think they have a really solid team. So just seeing what people are doing with that, it's not just NFT artwork that you're buying. You're actually, it's way more than that. That's why it's seeing what the team is and what they're giving out with it. Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
I've got an idea about comic books and NFTs and the future of comic books. Like, I'll talk about it a whole lot more because I've got an idea of where that's going.
I can tell you a bit about the Wastelanders one, the comic book that's going to be released end of February.
Sure.
And you get, if your character, your NFT character is in the comic, you get your character becomes more valuable. And we also pay you royalties for using your character. And also we have different pages, like the same page, but with different attributes. So your character could show up on one of those pages, but it might be a different character on the same page, but a different version.
Wow.
And then different things are missing. Like, since it's post-apocalyptic, if he has a plant, the one with the plant is more valuable because it's more rare. Or if you have food.
That's
and
so
the
cool.
Other, yeah.
That's so cool.
I don't think
I
it's
it.
Been done before, but yeah, we'll see.
I love it, man.
So what's your idea?
We'll talk more about it off air because it's too good to say anything about it on air.
Okay. All right.
If I give the idea to the right person.
Someone's going
to
do it. Yeah.
So, all right, man. All right, guys. We appreciate you guys listening to the House of Indie right here on the Geek Collective and Age of Radio Network. We will see you guys next time.